From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. For many Latinos, communicating means navigating two cultures, something that Siri, well, she struggles with it.
What do you want to say to Mom?
Mom, ¿cuándo vienes?
Your message to Mom says, Met, I love units. Ready to send it?
Today, conversations around language. We talk about degendering Spanish.
How do we pronounce this? What does it mean? Some people really, the arguments about contaminating language. Other people said, just use the feminine all the time after, you know, thousands of years of using the masculine as the universal.
All that and more as we talk about miscommunication and the confusion that comes with it. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. No te vayas. Hey, are you a music nerd or a fledgling music nerd who wishes they knew more about what's out there? The All Songs Considered podcast from NPR Music is here to help. All Songs Considered is NPR's music discussion and discovery podcast. Bob Boylan and Robin Hilton share the best of the best new and upcoming music, including the Carrie Brownstein we never knew and surprising reflections on the impact of David Bowie. Find lots of songs you'll fall in love with on All Songs Considered every Tuesday at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app. Welcome to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And we're going to start today, my dear listener, by talking about the title of our own show, which is Latino USA. So the word Latino is masculine because in Spanish, words have a gender. A little bit of Spanish 101. So in Spanish, words that end with O are usually masculine and words that end with an A are usually feminine. Now, if you only grew up speaking English, you might not be familiar with this concept because English actually is a gender-neutral language. But you might have come across the idea of gender in language if, like, for example, in high school, you were studying French or Spanish.
Yeah, it was one of the first things I learned in Spanish class, and it was really confusing. Like, why is a table feminine?
That's our producer, Sarah Barrett.
Hi, Maria. So did you ever question why a table was feminine when you were growing up speaking Spanish?
Which is so funny, because I was like, la mesa? No, I never thought about a particular word, like, why is la mesa female? But I knew it existed. This is different than English.
And most people, I would say, probably don't really question it if they're a native Spanish speaker. But recently, starting in about the 90s, a new thing started to happen online.
Latinette.
How I say...
L-A-T-I-N, at sign.
Latinao.
Latinat.
The word people started using is Latinette. There's an at sign at the end of that, and it kind of looks like an A inside of an O.
The first time I saw these words was with the arroba, Latinao, and that was in an online gay and lesbian LGBT community called Arenal, and that was in the 90s.
That's Juana Maria Rodriguez. She's a professor of gender and women's studies at UC Berkeley. She says back then, these new words sparked a lot of debate.
How do we pronounce this? What does it mean? Some people really, the arguments about contaminating language. Other people said, just use the feminine all the time after, you know, thousands of years of using the masculine as the universal.
Most people use the masculine form to be gender neutral without even thinking about it. And the Royal Academy of Spanish in Madrid, the biggest authority on Spanish language, agrees. But some people are pushing back. Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, the former president of Argentina, used to make a point in her speeches to include both genders.
Muchas gracias a todos y a todas.
Todos y todas is the male and female version of saying everybody. It's like saying it twice. The Royal Academy says that's redundant, and todos suffices, even when there's men and women in the group you're addressing. They advise just to use the male version.
todos or todas. You know, they're just words. But words are important because how we communicate shapes our lives. When we're not all on the same page, it can cause confusion or worse, a lot of pain. On today's show, stories about miscommunication, from the harmless and the humorous to the very serious, and not just misunderstandings between different languages, in this case, a disagreement within Spanish itself. Some people think that a gendered language is cool, but others find it exclusive and even discriminatory. So to start, we ask this question: should or even can Spanish become ungendered?
You know, gendered language can have an actual effect on people's daily lives, even in English. In Maryland, a statute about practicing law and being admitted to the bar used the word he throughout the document. And in 1886, the state Supreme Court decided that that word excluded women, making women not allowed to become lawyers. In legal writing, the singular pronoun was he, and it was supposed to be gender neutral, even though it might not have always been interpreted that way. So there was a push to start using other gender neutral pronouns like one or they, or a failed attempt, his/her, which is a combination of both his and her.
Some people wonder why we have to categorize people by gender at all. Here's UC Berkeley professor Juana Maria Rodriguez once again.
I'm a mom and I've been in my kids' classroom and they're like, okay, so boys line up over here and girls line up over there. I'm like, really? You know, maybe we could do this by size, height. Maybe who's wearing blue today? Line up over here. So there are other ways that we can think of categorizing people other than through gender. And I think those kinds of moves are really important because I do think that they impact how we think, how we perceive ourselves and our role in the world.
That's important because some studies actually link gendered language to gendered thoughts. If a children's storybook uses the word policeman instead of police officer,
a policeman got out. Can anyone tell us?
A child is going to picture a man. But what's more, studies have found that gendered language reinforces gender stereotypes in play and in life.
Now, if gendered language can be problematic, and that's why some people are trying to change it, the question is it even possible for a gendered language to lose its gender?
You know, it can. It has, and we're actually speaking it right now. I didn't know, but English used to be gendered. It had three genders.
What? Three?
Exactly. Old English, which was spoken between the 5th century up until about the 13th century, had masculine, feminine, and neuter nouns, neuter being gender neutral. Here's someone reading a clip from Beowulf.
After Berthea, ye boon hafton.
So that's Beowulf, the world's oldest surviving poem written in Old English. It's set in Scandinavia, full of battles with dragons and monsters.
So obviously language does change, but how did English actually lose its gender?
It's hard to pinpoint exactly how and when it changed, but English morphed a lot with the movement of people from what is now Germany to what is now England. And it came into contact with Old Norse, ancient French, and a lot of Germanic languages. Linguists say the biggest turning point happened about 1,000 years ago with the Norman conquest, when a large battalion of French soldiers crossed the channel, killed the King of England, and took over. There were so many new languages mixing in, French, German, Old Norse, and with all the different gendered endings, it became confusing. So a lot of words were shortened, and their endings just fell off to become gender neutral. So Maria, you asked if it would be possible for Spanish language to lose its gender. In Spain, about 8,000 people have signed a petition to incorporate gender-neutral terms.
There's sort of a movement by universities and unions and local governments to try to move away from more gendered language. So, for example, instead of saying los profesores, el profesorado.
So what some people want online is to drop the A or the O at the end of words altogether and put an X there.
For a while, part of what we were seeing, and we still see, is in a term like Latino to have a slash. So it'll say Latino slash A. That sort of still reinscribes the gender binary. In some ways, Latinx can be read as sort of a refusal of not just the gender binary, but of gender.
Oh. So no amigos, it would be amigex.
Mm-hmm.
No Latinos, it would be Latinx.
Mm-hmm. Chicano, Chicanx.
Okay.
It can get a little complicated and confusing. But even though some people like Juana are advocating for a gender-neutral term, she doesn't necessarily want to see gender erased from the language altogether.
You know, for a transgender Latina woman, she worked really hard to be called Latina. And if that is the pronoun that she wants to use, then I'm all about affirming her decision, right?
Besides that, Juana says there's something else that would be lost if language were completely gender neutral. An element of playfulness.
We live it and we love it and we play with it, right? So I think one of the things that language allows us to do is also code switch gender. So if I see, you know, one of my gay male friends looking particularly fierce, I can say, oye, estás guapísima.
Which roughly translates into, hey girl, you're looking great.
This might not be a person that wants to be having me use female pronouns all the time, but in this particular moment, it might be exactly the right thing to say.
And which is actually one of the things that I love playing with in terms of Spanish being gendered, switching around the female-male about it. And the truth is that, you know, some people find the word Latinx really empowering.
Some people, like Hector Luis Alamo, aren't so thrilled.
I have no clue how to pronounce it.
Hector is a deputy editor at Latino Rebels, a Latino culture and news website. He wrote a piece called The Case Against Latinx.
I get the intention. I get the goal of using Latinx, but I don't agree with the premise of their argument, which is that the word Latino is too exclusive or not inclusive enough. Nowadays, people use Latino in a very broad sense. That means men, women, LGBT, straight, you know, every kind of Latino you can think of. And I know that Latino USA uses the word Latino in that way, and I don't agree with the premise of that whole push to use a new word because Latino is too exclusive.
Hector has a point. Our show is called Latino USA, but by no means do we mean to limit our listenership or our stories to just be about male Latinos, right?
Absolutely. You know, there really does appear to be a movement online, though, toward gender-neutral pronouns these days. Language is alive and always in flux. Even Latinx detractors like Hector see the value in that.
If that's where Spanish goes, I mean, English has changed a lot from Beowulf, who might argue that it shouldn't evolve, that a language shouldn't evolve.
Just think about how angry people feel for new words like selfie, LOL, OMG. But those are all in the dictionary now. It's not just here. There's actually an international movement going on. Even in Sweden, they're trying to move toward gender-neutral classrooms. So, Maria, any chance we'll be seeing a Latinx USA in the future?
Possibly, if I could actually pronounce it and it would roll off my tongue, which it doesn't necessarily, but we can try. I'm all for change. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Maria.
This is the Mexican Dub Wiser.
Coming up on Latinx USA, an indigenous Mayan language finds its way into U.S. immigration court.
And when I start talking to them and mom, they look up and their face changes. Their eyes glow. They're giving me this message of like, oh my God, you speak my language.
Stay with us. No te vayas.
Pensando en algo que olvidas. Yo creo, tú sabes, pienso lo mismo. Lo olvido a medida que eres tú. Y todo lo que pienso está en suspenso. No prefiero nada antes que seguir así. Yo creo, tú sabes, pienso lo mismo.
Hola, hey you. Thank you so much for listening to our show this week. And before we get back to it, I want to share a note with you from a fellow listener, David in California. He writes, "Love your show. I get smarter every week. Thanks for adding diversity to my life." So please, if you can, join David and amazing listeners just like him who have gone to latinousa.org and clicked on the donate button. Every contribution helps, no matter how small. So muchísimas gracias, queridos. And one last favor, it would be really wonderful if you could take a moment to rate and review Latino USA on iTunes. Those of you who have done so already, thank you. It really makes a difference and helps us find new listeners. Thank you, and keep your comments coming because they really make us smile. Gracias.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Lumber Liquidators, a proud sponsor of NPR, offering more than 400 styles, including hardwood, bamboo, laminate, and vinyl. With flooring specialists in hundreds of stores nationwide, more at lumberliquidators.com or 1-800-HARDWOOD. And Cancer Treatment Centers of America, whose National Hispanic Advisory Council is devoted to educating the Hispanic community about the causes, treatment, and prevention of cancer. Learn more at cancercenter.com.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Now, there isn't much that smartphones can't do today. You know, just by tapping on your phone, you can get food delivered to your door. You can get a personal driver to show up to your house in minutes. I even use the Find My Friends app to see if my son is in the library or if he's just hanging out. I'm watching you, Raul. Well, now for all of the amazing things that devices can do, there's a pretty important function that is lacking. In Austin, Texas, Brenda Salinas asks, why can't Siri speak Spanglish?
Austin is a hands-free city. That means if you're behind the wheel and looking up directions on your smartphone, you better hope a cop doesn't pull you over. Most high-end smartphones come with voice recognition software, but Sandra Avila Ramirez had pretty much given up on hers.
And I found myself a couple of times on my phone just cursing at my phone because I'll ask for, you know, my sister's name, Elisa Lanis, four times. And it's, you have no Alan is on your, you know, phone. It's just ridiculous.
But recently, Sandra upgraded her Android phone.
Okay, Google, call Elisa Alanis.
Calling Elisa Alanis mobile.
Oh, wow. Yeah, my S3 did not have that. So now it's looking through my contacts and finding, I guess, whatever sounds similar or whatever it is. So it's gotten better for sure.
We compare OK Google on the Android Galaxy S6 to Siri on the latest Apple iPhone, the 6S. Now, keep in mind, this isn't a scientific test. It's just our own informal inquiry. Here's what we find. In terms of picking up on Spanish names, Siri passes the test too.
Calling Elisa Lanis.
How does OK Google stack up against Siri when it comes to other words in Spanish?
OK Google, text mom.
What's the message?
Mom, ¿cuándo vienes?
Got it.
Oh, wow. Look at this all fancy. This is awesome.
Now, let's see what Siri says.
What do you want to say to mom?
Mom, ¿cuándo vienes?
Your message to mom says, Meta, I love units. Ready to send it?
That's one for OK Google. All right, what about place names?
Call El Arroyo Restaurant.
Calling El Arroyo Far West.
Oh, this is definitely improved.
That's OK Google. But Siri?
The only option I see is Rocco's Italian Restaurant in Katy, which averages 3.5 stars and is moderately priced. Is that the one you're looking for?
All right, let's ask for some general information in both languages.
Okay, Google. When do you celebrate Dia de las Madres in Mexico?
According to Time and Date, Mother's Day is a popular celebration for mothers and mother figures across Mexico on May 10th.
Okay, so it's got a lot of the stuff that's more mainstream it looks like it's capturing.
Can Siri keep up with this?
Looking. I found something on the web about Celebrate Indiana Cosmetics in Mexico. Check it out.
So why does OK Google seem to be better than Siri at picking up Spanish in the middle of an English sentence? The short answer is that OK Google generally has a lot more data to work with. It has, well, all of Google. Ignacio Lopez Moreno developed some of the software. I spoke to him on the phone.
It's something that we know it happens in places like Texas and other places around the world, like Hong Kong.
He says OK Google can learn certain words if people in a particular area use them a lot. OK Google checks a user's words against their contacts and local maps. Every search becomes a part of OK Google's macro database.
Hong Kong, people speak Cantonese and English, so that in that area, the system learns over time how to recognize them. The same is the case for places like Austin or California, where Spanish words are used in street and restaurant names.
Ignacio says the more information they collect and analyze, the better bilingual voice recognition will be.
It is a complex question that I don't think you have a simple answer. At the end of the day, we always look to balance improvement in speech recognition for the majority of the users, taking into account the diversity of the backgrounds in the U.S. So it's not far-fetched that one day we'll be able to tackle more complex queries like, where can I find unos tacos riquísimos?
I would love it if Siri could tell me where to find good tacos riquísimos. One day, maybe, but not now. The cold hard truth is neither the Galaxy nor the iPhone can pick up on genuine Spanglish. Just listen to this.
Okay, Google. How do you get rid of your barriga?
That's your belly.
How do you get rid of your barriga?
Go ahead and tap the screen to send this or change something.
Change something? You want me to change my language?
Siri's struggling, too.
I'm sorry, Sandy. I do not know how to get rid of a barrio.
Gentrification aside, Sandra says better bilingual voice recognition is just smart business.
I always look at it in terms of marketing. You want my money, you market to me. I speak Tex-Mex sometimes. I speak Spanglish. I want to be able to switch from Spanish to English depending on who I'm talking to, and I want you to be able to recognize those words so that I can get my money's worth.
For now, Spanglish Siri isn't a reality. It can't mix languages together or switch back and forth the way a human brain can. But if tech companies hire more Spanglish speakers or really study how Spanglish works, how people really talk, then you may be talking with a Spanglish Siri sooner than you think.
Producer Brenda Salinas. So, while many Latinos, including me, speak English and Spanish, there are many languages spoken in Latin America that are not Spanish. Guatemalans who come to the United States and begin to navigate the immigration system are often given a Spanish interpreter. But many Guatemalans don't speak Spanish. Instead, they might speak an indigenous language like MAM. Rosendo Aguilar is one of only a handful of qualified MAM interpreters working in the immigration courts. He learned English at a community college after he immigrated to California and then fell into interpreting work by accident.
My name is Rosendo Aguilar and I'm a MAM interpreter. Hola, mi nombre es Rosendo Aguilar y yo soy un intérprete de MAM. Hi, how and be Rosendo Aguilar and hi, nehon interprete de Oquiol MAM. I'm from a very small town and everybody speaks MAM. I grew up speaking MAM and until I went to school, started learning Spanish. I knew I was always gonna like men and there was no way for me to live that type of life in my town or my country. So I decided to leave. Coming here and feel like you worth nothing because you can't communicate, you can't get around. It was tough. So it all started because I started working on my asylum case. They had other people who spoke MAM. They asked me then if I could interpret for somebody there, which I did. And I became popular, I guess. Somebody called me at some point, asking me to go with him to his appointment. So I interpret for this guy in court, and when we were done, the judge calls me at the bench. She says, he needs to talk to you. She was pointing at the court clerk, I think. And he says, are you allowed to do this kind of work? And I said, no. I mean, I never had anybody approved or authorized anything like that. Then he says, are you legal in this country? I was like, oh my God, where is this going? And I'm like, no, you know, I wasn't going to lie about it. And as we were speaking, he was writing down something, and that got me worried a little bit. Not a little bit, a lot, because it scared me after all. So when we were done talking, he hands me this piece of paper, and he says, this is my information. Give me a call if you get legalized in this country. I'd like to give you some information so you can work doing more of this type of work. So I took this piece of paper with me, and the day after my asylum case was approved, I called him. It was interesting to see that there are mom speakers all over the United States, because they started to fly me everywhere, really. And flying had never been part of my world. I was like, oh my God, I'm flying to this place. Oh my God, I'm flying here. One thing that I find very gratifying is to see people in court, because many of them are detained or jailed, and they would come in handcuffed, they're bound their heads, they're walking in. And when I start talking to them and mom, they look up and their face changes. Their eyes glow. They're giving me this message of like, oh my God, you speak my language. For me to be able to communicate, not only for myself, but to be able to give people voice.
Interpreter Rosendo Aguilar. Our story was produced by Marisa Ortega Welch. Now, without interpreters like Rosendo, non-English speakers would be pretty lost in the U.S. court system. Language barriers, though, can also come up in the healthcare system. In fact, sometimes even if you do speak the same language, you might not really know what your doctor is talking to you about. Our producer, Julia Alsop, brings us now to 1970s Los Angeles, when a misunderstanding around language had some very serious consequences.
The due date for Consuelo Hermosillo's baby was September 20th, 1973. But her contractions started early, by about 20 days.
I went to the hospital on the 1st of September.
She ended up at LA County Hospital.
They admitted me. From there, they put me in a hall, not a room.
It was one of those big teaching hospitals with a strange reputation.
I wasn't the only one. It was a lot of women on the hall. Some of them were screaming, some of them were saying, please help me and stuff like that.
Consuelo remembers very little from that night, but she does remember being in that hallway for what felt like a long time. And she remembers a lot of different people, nurses, orderlies, coming in and out, bringing her a paper to sign. She waved it off. She had already consented to a C-section.
My contractions started harder and harder, and I turned around and I looked at a lady that she was cleaning. I said, when are they going to take me to have my baby? And she said, ay, mija, you better sign that paper they're bringing you. And I looked at her and she said, you better sign or your baby's going to die. From there, I don't remember nothing. I don't know if they gave me any epidural. I don't remember nothing.
Consuelo woke up, a happy, healthy baby girl in her arms, and her husband by her side.
Doctor went and visited me and to release me to send me home. And I asked him, so doctor, what am I going to use so I won't get pregnant again? He said, you don't need to get pregnant. You're not having any kids anymore. That was hard for me. My husband looked at me. I looked at him. We didn't say anything. I just couldn't believe it. I remember them telling me, you know, you want to have your tubes cut, but I remember saying yes.
Consuelo wasn't the only woman who went to LA County for a routine delivery and came out with her tubes tied, meaning she was sterilized.
There was shock last month over the revelation that the state of Virginia sterilized thousands of persons between 1922 and 72 in a program aimed at ridding the state of so-called misfits. Now it develops that similar programs were carried out in some 30 states.
Documents collected from state records indicate the vast majority of the sterilizations took place in 12 states, with California accounting for nearly a third of the total.
The practice was carried out in public and teaching hospitals in different states throughout the 1900s, mostly on women of color or poor white women. In California, that meant about 20,000 sterilizations between 1909 and 1979. And at LA County specifically, the majority of these women were Mexican immigrants.
One of the women shared with me that she had heard the term esterilización, and so she always thought when they translated the word to her at the hospital that it was a cleaning sterilization, that it was a cleaning of the womb or something. She understood it to be that.
In this case, one word, one little misinterpretation, had huge consequences. These clips are from a documentary called No Más Bebés. It re-examines a lawsuit Consuelo and nine other women who said they were sterilized without proper consent launched against LA County Hospital in 1975. And for Renee Tajima Pena, one of the co-directors of the film, the question of how this happened is really complicated.
People are always asking me, well, who's the villain? Who's the bad guy?
In the 1970s, the government was funneling money to public hospitals for family planning programs.
On the one hand, those family planning programs were great. I mean, women who didn't have the resources on their own, who were low income, had access to contraception for the first time. I mean, that was great. But because you have this perfect storm of all these other kinds of forces going on, it created this possibility of abuse.
The government's interest in family planning wasn't just about a woman's right to choose when and how to have kids. The government said its fears were also about overpopulation.
Donald Rumsfeld, the White House counselor, said today Washington eventually will have to do something about this country's rapidly growing population. For example, he said it'll have to decide about persuading or coercing its citizens to have fewer children.
And more subtly, the fear of who was overpopulating. The documentary talks with Dr. Edward J. Quilligan, the head obstetrician of LA County at the time.
To sort of claim that we're part of a greater goal of sterilizing the Mexican population that immigrates to Los Angeles, I mean, I'm offended by that. That's not what we did. That's not what we discussed. That's not what anybody even intimated. At least not while I was at LA County Hospital.
The court found no wrongdoing on the part of the doctors. But what did come out of the case was a clearer idea of informed consent. The court mandated that consent forms come in multiple languages. And patients under 21 have to be given a 72-hour wait period to think it over before going ahead with the sterilization procedure. But for Consuelo, it doesn't matter that the doctors could present a consent form in court and show that she had signed it. None of those cold, hard documents could erase what had happened. And for years, she didn't tell anybody.
I just felt like I did something wrong. I was ashamed. Like our culture in Mexico, you know, it's kind of different. Over there, you know, when you get together in parties and they say, oh, when are you having another one? And my husband and me just looked at each other. I will describe it that it's an abuse. I couldn't believe they took the right for me to decide if I wanted to have more kids. Why? Who are they?
Thanks to Julia Alsop for that story. And the premiere of No Más Bebés was one of the first times that many of Consuelo's friends and family ever learned that she had been sterilized against her will. The documentary airs on PBS on February 1st, 2016. Coming up on Latino USA, down the rabbit hole with our producer, Antonia Cerejido, as she tells us about a theory on music, romance, and español that she developed when she was just 16. Stay with us, no te vayas. Hey, are you a music nerd or a fledgling music nerd who wishes they knew more about what's out there? The All Songs Considered podcast from NPR Music is here to help. All Songs Considered is NPR's music discussion and discovery podcast. Bob Boylan and Robin Hilton share the best of the best new and upcoming music, including the Carrie Brownstein we never knew and surprising reflections on the impact of David Bowie. Find lots of songs you'll fall in love with on All Songs Considered every Tuesday at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Gilchrist Foundation, supporting NPR's enduring commitment to making music, arts, and culture accessible to audiences in the Midwest and across America. More information is available at thegilchristfoundation.org. And the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, supporting Wikipedia and the Digital Public Library of America through its Universal Access to Knowledge program, working to facilitate the openness and accessibility of all knowledge. At sloan.org.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Sometimes a word or a phrase in one language can have a slightly different or very different meaning when it's translated into another language. And that can also happen in music. Our producer, Antonia Cerejido, has been thinking about this for quite a while now.
When I was 16, I traveled to visit my extended family in Buenos Aires, Argentina, without my parents for the first time. And I soon found out that being 16 in Buenos Aires is a way sweeter deal than being 16 in San Diego, where I grew up. Up until that point, my parents had to drive me everywhere. I'd always end up hanging out at a friend's living room or at the Claremont movie theater, eating froyo. In Buenos Aires, I had freedom. I could take the bus anywhere. And most importantly, I could go dancing. In Argentina, there are boliches, that's what they call dance clubs, that are specifically 16 and up. And this rocked my world. And at every boliche, I started to hear the same song. Perdóname by La Factoría. Perdóname means forgive me in Spanish. And in the song, Eddie Lover, the lead singer of La Factoría, says that he's on his knees. He's begging her to take him back. And it was on the dance floor that summer that I came up with a theory. Romantic songs in Spanish are all about asking for forgiveness. They're about saying sorry. But in the U.S., you don't sing about being sorry. You sing about how you were wronged. In 2007, Perdóname was the biggest hit in Argentina. But in the U.S., Beyoncé's Irreplaceable was the number one song. I got the impression that in Spanish, you sung about how you deserve a second chance. And in English, you sang about how your partner didn't deserve one. But I'm not, nor was I ever, a music expert. So it's very possible that there are tons of sorry songs in genres that I'm not that familiar with, in country or R&B. But at the time, I was a pop-loving teenager. And so I asked around the Latino USA office to see if anyone else grew up with a similar theory.
So I didn't grow up with that theory in my head.
This is Fernanda Echavarri, a fellow Latino USA producer. She grew up in Querétaro, in Mexico, until she was 14 when she moved to Arizona.
And actually, I just went back home for the holidays, so I left some boxes at my parents' house. And I looked through some of the boxes, and I had these letters from my first, my first real boyfriend when I was in maybe seventh grade. His name was Fernando. And yes, we were Fernando y Fernanda. And every single letter that I opened from Fernando started with, "I'm sorry." Hola, Fer. Oye, perdóname. Like every single letter, there were probably like seven or eight, and every single one started with, "I'm sorry." And I was like, why did he keep apologizing?
You don't remember what he was apologizing for?
I mean, if you keep reading, he doesn't really say what he's apologizing for. It's like, "Fer, I'm so sorry I got you this teddy bear. I'm so sorry I got you these flowers." Which in some ways, it's like apologizing maybe was a way of courting me? I'm not really sure.
There's something super romantic about apology songs.
So while Fernanda may not have had my theory growing up, we could still both relate to listening to these songs during moments of hormonal change. And together, we were actually able to elaborate on my theory, because not all sorry songs are created equal.
Since hearing about the theory, you and I have talked about how there's different levels of sorry songs in Spanish.
Oh, absolutely. They must be addressed.
We start at level one.
Perdóname from Dioro.
Hago lo que quieras, perdóname, mi nena.
I want to say I'm sorry, but I also don't want to stop dancing. It's not really I'm sorry that I broke up with you or that I cheated on you. It's I'm sorry that I did something kind of silly and let's keep partying.
So following that, what is the second rung of sorry songs?
There's this second level of sorry, which is a little more on the cutesy side, and it's still kind of upbeat, but this one is more meaningful.
Te pido perdón, or I ask for your forgiveness, by Tito el Bambino.
Hoy te vuelvo a llamar para pedirte que me perdones.
It's a level of sorry of like, we actually have a relationship and I didn't screw up that bad, so I'm going to try to make you smile and then you're going to be really happy about this and go tell all your friends about what a sweet gesture I did.
The thing that that makes this like a higher level is like he actually says like, te amo, like I love you. And it is like heart melting. I totally feel like this would work on me.
I think it would work on me too. So then after that, I think you go to another level of forgiveness. Like we're starting to get a little more serious. Maybe the reason for asking for forgiveness is something that's a little bit bad. Mm. And perhaps you've been in this relationship for a while.
The song Perdón by Camila.
Lo siento.
This is some serious stuff. It's like, I swore I would love you. I'm sorry that I lied. I'm sorry that I'm leaving. This is like the end of something real.
This is like for sure a breakup, sorry.
This is like what you sing by yourself in the car when you think about the breakup.
So that was like pretty serious. Like, I don't know, like, are we actually going to get even more tragic than that? Like, how is this going to go?
I think we can go one level higher. And the next level is, this is years after the major screw up. This is years after you broke somebody's heart.
Oh my God.
And this is Pepe Aguilar. Perdóname by Pepe Aguilar.
Perdóname por haberte lastimado sin querer. Solo quise cuidarte, mimarte, adorarte. Perdóname.
Okay, I can't hear any more of this. I'm getting like a little too sad.
Yeah.
This feels to me like the truest form of asking for forgiveness. And it's time has passed and I realize that I hurt you and I'm sorry that I didn't treat you well. And I hope that time can heal your wounds.
It's so interesting to me because it's one of those like it hurts so good situations.
Yes.
So as you just heard, sorry songs come in all genres, pop, power ballads, reggaeton, and of course, mariachi. But there's one Latin genre that is really the ultimate apology song genre. When I first talked to you on the phone about this, I was like, oh, I'm looking for apology songs. And you were like, oh, you must be talking about bachata.
Yes.
I called in the help of Joel Moya, who works at Remezcla, a Latino music and culture website. He's the self-proclaimed resident Dominican in their office.
If we go back to the origin of bachata, o sea, it's songs that came from the working class, bachatas cortavenas.
Cortavenas, an expression I absolutely love. It literally means vein cutting. And it describes the kind of songs where people pour all their feelings out.
And you're going to listen to it and you're going to cry.
Melodrama at its finest. And if you're a bachata fan, then you know that the group that brought bachata to an international audience was Aventura, a group of Dominicans from the Bronx. They have their fair share of sorry songs, including the appropriately titled I'm Sorry, released in 2003. Okay. So there are a lot of sorry songs in Spanish. The first half of my theory totally holds up. But the second part, that songs in English don't say sorry, well, last year something happened that blew that part apart. You know what song I'm talking about. It's not just that a song about asking for forgiveness became kind of popular in the U.S. The number one song in 2015, the kind of song that people will be playing at weddings and bar mitzvahs decades from now, was Justin Bieber's Sorry. Is it too late now to say sorry? 'Cause I'm missing more than just your body. Oh, is it too late now to say sorry? What a lot of people don't know about Sorry is that it has a dembow beat. Dembow is that boom, chipum, boom, chipum loop you hear in all reggaeton songs. Joel Moya again.
Just the fact that it has the dembow beat, it makes it a little bit sexier.
And there's even an official Latino remix of Sorry featuring reggaeton's biggest star right now, J Balvin. Quisiera regresar el tiempo y cambiar errores.
If I say sorry to you in English or mami, lo siento.
Right, one is like much, much like more heartfelt. Do you think like there will be more apology songs or less apology songs in the future?
There will always be apology song because it sells. If there's no apology song, there will be no more J Balvin, there will be no more bachata.
The way people court each other is different depending on where in the world they are. I think it's much more common in Latin America, like if you meet someone like the first week to say like, I love you. And that's not like a crazy thing to say. Like, I feel like here in America, if you say I love you in the first week, you are a total crazy person. People
look at
you.
Every TV show you watch, any like romantic comedy, it's like the L word. Like, did somebody say it? Oh my God, he said it first. I said it first. It's just a word.
Right. But in Latin America, it's like, where's the fun? If you're not falling in love and also hurting, like, it sounds terrible. It's like, where's the fun if you're not hurting somebody else? But it allows for these, like, big gestures that I think are, like, much more commonplace and much more accepted.
I think you just brought it all back around to the very beginning, which is apologizing is romantic.
Despite all my love for sorry songs, now in both languages, there's one glaring aspect of them that makes me a little nervous. Is the message sorry songs are sending to women okay? It's this conflict that I have, like, as a Latina woman and, like, loving the apology thing. I'm like, is this, like, machista and wrong? Like, that we're, like, allowing for, like, the guys to screw up and then say sorry? But I don't know.
But, hey, we're not saying we're taking them back.
Good point.
They may apologize and they may sing their hearts out, and it doesn't mean that the woman allows them to do it again.
Did you hear that? I can listen to Perdóname by La Factoría and put on Irreplaceable by Beyoncé right after. But for now, I'll keep listening to Bieber Sorry on repeat.
Latino USA producer Antonia Cerejido. And seriously, if you listened to that segment and thought of any other apology songs in any language, tweet them to Antonia's handle, which is Antonia Cere, Antonia C-E-R-E. And, oh yeah, sorry. So you've heard examples on our show today of how what we say might not always be what we mean. We've all been guilty of a little linguistic mishap from time to time. And of course, if you know someone who's bilingual, that probably happens a lot more often than with other folks. So we put out a call on our social media asking you to send us your stories about miscommunications, and we got some pretty great responses.
I came to the U.S. when I was about 12, and I didn't know a lot of English. I remember learning a lot from context, just watching people have conversations, like on TV or life in general. And I remember watching a show, one of the characters asked a question of the other, and the other responded with, "I guess so." To me, I thought the person had answered yes. So I remember talking to a girl a few weeks later, a girl that I had a crush on, and she asked me, "Hey, do you like me?" And I answered, "I guess so." And her response was, "You guess so?" And I just stumbled and I was like, "Yeah, I guess so." So that was a weird moment. Never got to go out with the girl.
So my mom, Sonia, she was from Puerto Rico, and her English was pretty good. But every now and again, she would get her wires crossed. And I remember one time she couldn't decide whether to say, "I've got to start from scratch," or "I've got to start all over." And she ended up saying, "Now I've got to start scratching all over."
So I inherited my bilingual problems from my mother. When I was young, my mother would mix up the words to children's songs. She might forget them, but she didn't care. She would just make up the words as she went along. But then I would go to school, and the kids would laugh at me because I was singing them incorrectly. And so something like "Old MacDonald wouldn't have a farm." She would say, "Old MacDonald was a cow. Moo, 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 moo. Old MacDonald was a cat. Meow, meow, meow." And they would make fun of me, but eventually they would come around because they realized that they could mix up the words and it could be more fun.
My mom and I were going to go pick up my nephew, who was maybe 6 at the time. So we get there and she's talking to him and tells him something kind of along the lines of, "I take you babysitty." And instead of seeing a very cheerful, happy, excited 6-year-old, I see one who looks kind of scared. And I ask him, "Papi, what's wrong? You don't want to go with grandma?" He takes a couple of seconds and then just very blankly asks me, "Why is grandma taking me to a baby city?" He thought that his grandmother was going to drop him off at a city of babies. She meant babysitting, and he didn't get that at all.
Thanks to Christopher Rivera, our own Lita Hartman, and Jessica Sanchez for sending in their stories. We loved hearing your hashtag bilingual problems. In fact, language miscommunications, yes, they can cause trouble, but you know they can also be pretty hilarious. It's part of the fun of belonging to more than one place and of thinking in more than one language. And that's it for today. Latino USA was produced by Antonia Cerejido, Daisy Rosario, Lita Hartman, Marlon Bishop, Fernanda Echavarri, Michael Simon Johnson, and Sarah Barrett. Julia Hsu is our production assistant. Our engineer is Cornelius McMoyler. Nadia Raymond is our music editor. Mary Gaffney at WBEZ recorded our session. And Nancy Trujillo makes it all happen. This week, we say goodbye to producer Julia Alsop. Julia, you are a creative and thoughtful force, and we can't wait to hear what you work on next. Thanks so much for everything, Julia. Our show is founded at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week. And in the meantime, look for us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. Y yo te veo on Instagram. Maria_la_Hinojosa. Ciao.
Funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and Carnegie Corporation, promoting the advancement and diffusion of knowledge and understanding.
Peleamos, nos arreglamos,
nos mantenemos, pero luego nos amamos.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Emily and Antoine Van Ochtmail, supporting New Futures, which works to help low-income D.C. area youth graduate from community college or certificate programs and become financially self-sufficient. Information is available at newfuturesdc.org. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, committed to focusing on the areas of greatest need to help ensure more children and young people survive and thrive. More information is available at gatesfoundation.org. This is NPR.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA.
I, as a member of Congress, have much more power over the day-to-day affairs of the people of Puerto Rico than the president of the Senate of Puerto Rico. Why? Because Puerto Rico is a colony of the United States.
The crisis in Puerto Rico and what's being done about it. Next time on Latino USA.